Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
The story of America's bloodiest prison.
And I'm Jim Chapman.
Woody Overson.
And we are back with Hurricane Part 3.
Yes.
This has been a fun little series to do. Very interesting.
It is, and especially we're still under threat of hurricanes.
Yeah, right? There might be one coming tomorrow. Right. Let's hope it turns.
Hope it goes another way.
Yeah. But when we last left you, we told you about the evacuation of primarily of OPP, Orleans Parish Prison, right. And they were moving those inmates and housing them at many different places inside of the state of Louisiana. Of course, this is a government entity that after all of this went down, they basically went in and they, I guess you could say, provided oversight on it. And they, you know, they wanted to figure out what was done right, what was done wrong. There had never been a situation this bad occur after hurricanes. So we're going to continue on, and Woody's going to pick up first, and he's going to tell you about LCIW, who was housing some of the, well, a lot of those evacuees and arrestees. And LCIW, y'all, is Louisiana Correctional Center Institute for Women.
Yep. And it's right over there in St. Gabriel, Louisiana. And y'all, it's just south of Baton Rouge, pretty close to the river. And also, we're close to Elaine Hunt's Correctional Institute, which is serves as the intake for every convict that gets sentenced to the Department of Corrections, and they classify you and send you to whatever prisons. But anyway, back to it. So the LCIW was housing arrestees and evacuees there, okay? And as the only women's institution in the state, LCIW was the natural place to move female evacuees and arrestees. So y'all, it's not just the prisoners they already had. They, of course, crimes are still being committed after the floods happened and everything, and they're evacuating. So the arrestees also. Fortunately, LCIW is located close to Elaine Hunt's Correctional Institute, which made the transfer of female prisoners processed through EHCI relatively easily. Like EHCI, LCIW staff felt overwhelmed by the sudden influx of additional offenders. And also, like Elaine Hunt's, the staff still felt somewhat overwhelmed at the time of the consultant's visit, some 5 months after Katrina. And unlike EHCI, the scale of the movement of evacuees and arrestees to LCIW was nothing like what occurred at EHCI. Y'all, EHCI is Elaine Hunt's, I told you about. With a rated capacity of 1,100 inmates, LCIW had been operating between 1,000 and 1,100 average daily population, or ADPL. At its peak, the resident population of evacuees and arrestees reached 340, or just under one-third of the regular population, compared to Elaine Hunt Correctional Center, which at one point housed a group that equaled 150% of their resident population. The LCIW staff were much too busy and tired to feel lucky by comparison. The general strategy at LCIW was to move resident inmates out of the segregation unit and one other dorm and put evacuees and later arrestees in these two areas. With those two locations, when those two locations became badly overcrowded, the institution was forced to mix evacuees and arrestees with resident inmates in some units. Can you imagine that? You get you jaywalking or whatever. You stole a TV from Walmart after the storm, and now they're going to put you in with murderers.
Yeah, and I actually have seen a documentary where two guys came down from, like, West Virginia,
yeah,
and one of them on Bourbon Street got drunk, got into some trouble, and they threw him in a drunk tank.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Right before Katrina,
and now
he's transferred all over Louisiana.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, so they had to mix them up, y'all. But they didn't want to do this. They had hoped to avoid this. And in retrospect, the management staff thought they would have been better off using this tent city on the yard rather than overcrowding all of their living units. They were unaware that Elaine Hunt's that approach had proved unworkable in a number of ways. The institution's infrastructure was challenged at many different levels. It was very difficult to provide sufficient medical services. As was true everywhere else in the department, LCIW staff found that new prisoners arrived in very bad conditions and needed clothes, food, water, showering, and de-lysing. Yeast infections and rashes were common, whether from polluted floodwaters or from lack of recent hygiene. Staff expressed concerns about communicable diseases, but there was little that could be done with regard to screening or prevention. Feeding and exercise took much longer than normal, and with 75% of the population on medication, the pill passes were themselves a lengthy operation. And y'all, they do pill calls however many times a day they have to do pill passes or pill calls. But it has to be supervised by a nurse and a CA. So imagine that many more people. But from the outset, staff recognized they could not conduct business as usual. Most managers were at the institution 24/7, and frontline and security staff responded wonderfully with no absentee issues in spite of the many hardships individual staff members were experiencing. The resident inmate population was extremely cooperative, which made the whole operation much easier. And for their part, staff went out of their way to keep the population informed frequently and in detail. The staff involved inmates preparing emergency food rations to be sent to New Orleans, and that was a morale booster for the inmate population. Staff also set up systems to allow new detainees phone calls and to get messages to them, as was the case at Elaine Hunt. The department's emphasis on suicide recognition, prevention, and training paid dividends as the institution made a conscious decision to keep social workers on the floors and walking through the living units, and in general, to make staff present as visible as possible. Not surprisingly, the single most frustrating aspect of the situation for the staff was the inability to identify prisoners as they came off the buses and the lack of knowledge about personal, medical, or criminal histories. Well, in general, the institution's infrastructure held up to the challenge quite well. The facility was on emergency power for several days, but that did not produce any particular new crisis. The food supply was good and was not severely challenged. The management staff established a command post at the outset and ensured that it was staffed by a person empowered to make decisions at all times. Unlike Elaine Hunt's management staff described communication with the IMC, which was primarily by phone or email, but they described it as exceptionally good. Gasoline was in critically short supply for about 2 days, both for institutional needs and for staff personal vehicles so they could drive to work and back. And after 2 days, the department was able to provide an adequate supply of gasoline. And all staff interviewed were extremely pleased with the internal emergency response of the institution and identified that as the best thing that happened in the situation. Sounds like they're making a, you know, pretty positive response on some of those things.
Yeah, I think so. And when the consultants visited LCIW at the end of January 2006, managers there said the most difficult time is now. They meant that with the height of the crisis passing and with approximately 150 evacuees and arrestees remaining in the institution, they were continuing to face overcrowding and some negative staff morale at line levels due to the months of pressure and overtime. They had budget cuts, positions were being left unfilled, and managers were doing supervisors' work. For inmates, cutting back on programs had a negative effect on morale, and I think that's an important thing to note. These programs that they're used to doing, which are all based on keeping the morale of your inmates up,
right,
all of a sudden stopped because you just had too many people. The consultants were able to spend some time interviewing a group of inmates who had been evacuated from OPP, Orleans Parish Prison. The group included one woman who was evacuated from JPP, Jefferson Parish Prison. Unlike the male evacuees, the women in OPP had been taken to the overpass bridge and then directly to buses and had not spent any length of time waiting on the overpass. To a person, they did describe horrendous conditions at OPP and JPP prior to their evacuations. As had been true with the male evacuees, the women described a variety of serious problems with the legal system, ranging from not knowing what offense they were charged with or to why they were held, to being months behind or months beyond a scheduled jail release date. Louisiana Department of Public Safety and Corrections staff confirmed the amount of legal problems described did apply to some of the evacuees still held within the prison system. And it should be emphasized that these were criminal justice system problems and almost exclusively problems at a parish level, and that Louisiana Department of Safety and Corrections was working with the Attorney General's office to attempt to resolve problems of identity and charges. Now, the female evacuees were a group, and they were angry and upset about the conditions inside LCIW. Most of the issues they described stem from being isolated and being accorded different treatment than a resident female inmate population. The female evacuees complained about being kept on 23-hour lockdown for months, the lack of availability of indigent packages for months, long delays in getting medication, no distribution of clothes given to the resident population, sleeping on floors for the first 3 months, and continuing lack of access to phones and continuing prohibition against family visits. The consultants were not in a position to investigate individual inmate complaints or even to verify some of the concerns. LCIW staff did confirm that many of the situations involving mattresses, services, hygiene items, and the like were as described. The consultants discussed the situation with phone access and with family visits with the administrative staff, and there was a decision that the evacuees should be given immediate access to family visits and phones. And I would agree with that.
I do too.
For sure.
Keep calm. Yeah, they're human beings. They're worried about their families and everything that's going on outside, right?
Right. And families worried about them. They may not even know where they're at.
Put you a whole new stress level, and you just give them the phone access and it makes that go away.
Right.
So, let's talk about the evacuees at the Louisiana State Penitentiary, which we all know is Angola, right? It's one of the legendary old state prison work farms dating to the 1800s. Georgia had Reidsville, Mississippi had Parchment, Arkansas had Tucker. And most southern states had a large prison work camp, usually named for the community in which it was located, where inmates worked in the fields and were supervised and guarded by other inmates, all under the eye of a small number of staff bosses on horseback in the fields and in the offices within the prison. The Louisiana State Penitentiary has a colorful and at times very violent history, and that's why we're here on Bloody Angola.
That's right.
So today, LSP is a modern, large prison with a capacity of approximately 5,800 inmates.
Hey, y'all, it may be moving towards the end of another summer, but that doesn't mean I can quit watching what I eat. We all know home-cooked meals are so much better for you, but you don't always have time to pull it off. But with HelloFresh handling all the meal planning, shopping, and most of the prep, it's easier than ever to get dinner on the table quick and painless. There's always new flavors to explore with an ever-changing menu of 50 recipes to choose from every week. Just pick your meals and your delivery date. It's that simple. With summer in the rearview mirror and busier days ahead, now is the perfect time to save money when it comes to your dinner routine. Skip the meal planning and grocery store lines and cut down on food waste with HelloFresh's convenient doorstep delivery and pre-measured ingredients. My favorite aspect of HelloFresh is the vast array of menu options. Look, I can burn out on eating the same things over and over again, but with HelloFresh, I don't ever run out of options. Y'all, I tried the spinach one pan chicken last week, and all I can say is my mouth is still watering. It was that good. For free breakfast for life, go to HelloFresh.com/freebloodyangola. One free breakfast item per box while subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life just by going to HelloFresh.com/freebloodyangola. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an Orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
There is one warden, Burl Kane, over the entire operation, but the prison is subdivided into much smaller camps that have their own administrators and which are physically separated on the 18,000 acres that the prison still occupies. Under Warden Kane, there are 3 deputy wardens and 14 assistant wardens. There are approximately 1,700 staff at Angola, with the majority correctional officers and supervisors. The inmate population is 80 to 85% African American and 10 to 15% white, with no other significantly large ethnic population. The staff are approximately 50% white and 50% African American. Security staff are approximately 60% male and 40% female. And most people find that shocking, right?
Yeah, that's interesting that there's 40% female on that.
The prison has no major contract functions. Outside hospital assistance is provided primarily by Louisiana State University. LSP is now a modern, low-violence prison with a heavy emphasis on inmate agricultural work, other prison enterprises, and inmate programming. There are a few serious problems, and the institution is often visited by correctional professionals from other states and other countries. There is a particularly broad emphasis on faith-based programming, and the warden believes that direction has been one of the reasons for the institution's success. Now, Angola has a long history with hurricanes and generally has not had great trouble. Angola is far enough inland that historically hurricanes have diminished in intensity sufficiently that they have passed over Angola without catastrophic impact. Still, the prison complex is well practiced at preparing for hurricanes and riding them out. Now, LSP weathered Katrina's direct impact without serious problems. They did lose power, but one of the lessons the prison had learned over the past hurricanes was the importance of emergency power, and Angola had managed to acquire several large portable generators, as well as the usual fixed emergency days. The department was able to provide an adequate supply of gasoline. All staff interviewed were extremely pleased with the internal emergency response of the institution and identified that as that's the same thing I read earlier. That's what I ended.
Okay, so you flipped here.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Okay, 28, 29. I think you did it backwards.
I had the other ones earlier. I'll just cut it off.
Okay, no. I see. Okay, so you're here.
All right.
Read that last yellow.
Boom. Generators running on emergency power was neither new for the prison, nor was it particularly problematic. And by Monday evening, the staff at Angola thought that except for the power outage, Katrina was behind them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's what they thought. Right. So LSP staff and buses, they had assisted with the evacuation of lower Louisiana parishes to Dixon. And on Monday of that week, Assistant Warden Kathy Fontenot was describing the evacuation of the lower parishes to media representatives as reports of the New Orleans flooding began to come in. When the request to evacuate JPP and OPP were received, Assistant Warden Fontenot, like many other staff members, made arrangements for childcare and went into the prison Monday night, prepared to stay many days, which she did. Assistant Warden Fontenot was responsible for classification at Louisiana State Penitentiary, and she quickly called her key staff and then got medical staff headed back to the prison and began to prepare for a massive intake of inmates. Early on, Louisiana State Penitentiary was sending buses to help return the Lafayette Parish inmates from DCI and also sending buses to Elaine Hunt so that Jefferson Parish Prison and Orleans Parish prisoners could be taken to Elaine Hunt.
Right.
The staff at Louisiana State Penitentiary expected to get Jefferson Parish Prison inmates first, which they did. During the first night of the evacuation, prisoners from New Orleans were sent directly to Louisiana State Penitentiary, as well as directly to Elaine Hunt. The early processing went well, and the evacuees from Jefferson Parish Prison generally seemed to be in somewhat better shape than the Louisiana State Penitentiary staff had expected. Many of the media reports they read were saying the inmates were emaciated. And as was true of Elaine Hunt Correctional, the Louisiana State Prison staff was not sure what to expect in the way of total evacuees, and communication in Baton Rouge was not good in this regard. There was communication about specific convoys, numbers of buses, drivers, and fuel, but more of a general briefing and the big picture was missing. For his part, Warden Kane was on site as the Louisiana State Penitentiary prepared to receive evacuees and then left to drive to New Orleans to work with Secretary Stadler in organizing the evacuations of JPP and OPP. Two assistant wardens from Louisiana State Penitentiary were detailed to the State Emergency Operations Center and were involved 24/7 in receiving missions assigned to corrections by FEMA. In Warden Kane's absence, Louisiana State Penitentiary was under the direct command of Deputy Warden Cheryl Renatza. As prisoners from OPP began to arrive at Angola in the middle of the night Tuesday, the situation at Angola became more difficult. By then, Elaine Hunt had been designated as an initial processing location, and evacuees were no longer being directly received from New Orleans. The initial inmates were not in as good a shape as the Jefferson Parish Prison inmates, the ones from Orleans Parish Prison, and they were described by one staff member at Angola as looking as if they had arrived directly from hell. Angola did not have projections about how many inmates they would get or which inmates they would get. At one point, the deputy warden was on the phone asking, "Can you just tell me whether the inmates coming in are male or female?" They didn't even know that, y'all. Think about that. You've got all these inmates coming from these pretty major jails, and you don't even know if they're male, female, how many, what's wrong with them. Sorry. It's that's chaos. Jeez. In fact, over the next several days, Angola received approximately 2,000 evacuees, some directly and some sent from Elaine Hunt. Included in that number were several hundred female inmates. And so, you know, you don't even know what they're in there for. Who's dangerous? Who's not dangerous? Who's in there for jaywalking?
Who's a murderer?
Just absolutely crazy.
Whatever, right?
Yeah.
And so the female inmate issue was noteworthy for Angola because historically, the last female inmates had been moved out of Angola in 1961. Thus, the prison had no hygiene supplies for women, no housing areas that had accommodated women, and no programs or services designed for women, and no staff accustomed to working with female offenders. And we, Mama Karen Ortolano could tell you about that.
Yeah.
She said that they were much worse.
No doubt.
Much worse than working with the men. But anyway, in general, Angola handled the influx of evacuees by placing most male prisoners in unoccupied areas like gymnasiums and the educational center, and by moving approximately 400 male inmates out of a dormitory that was secure from the rest of the institution and moving the female inmates into that dorm. As the evacuation continued, prisoners who were troublemakers were typically identified during transportation and then offloaded first upon arrival and sent directly to some form of restrictive housing. Then Angola knows how to deal with those types. The general processing at Angola was that evacuees receive medical and mental health screening first, then were fingerprinted, a mugshot was taken, and a plastic ID bracelet was used, and then prisoners were showered, given clothing and a blanket, and assigned to a permanent or temporary housing area. The problem with the lack of identification of evacuees, the lack of personal and medical records and medications was not different than Elaine Hunt's Correctional Institute. Angola was less overwhelmed with the influx of evacuees in general, and the processing at Angola appears to have been somewhat more systematic and thorough. Well, I got a little bit more practice at it, probably. Mm-hmm. But staff at Angola worked very long hours during the evacuation. No staff from the parish prisons accompanied the evacuees to Angola, which I think that's kind of crazy, right? And which had also been the case at Elaine Hunt's. Now, while Angola staff did try to run inmates through the NCIC, that's the National Crime Information Computer, y'all, many inmates remain unidentified. Inevitably, a few high-profile cases appeared among the population of evacuees, as had been true at Elaine Hunt's. Now, a teacher from Ohio, this might have been the one you were talking about, Jim, was picked up drunk on Bourbon Street, was incarcerated for months, and then there was an African-American PhD student from Tulane who continued to assert that she had no knowledge of why she was being held. With no contact with state prosecutor's office from Baton Rouge, the situation with the inmate identification was very frustrating for staff. And a total of 2,100 parish prisoners passed through Angola, including male and female evacuees, with the exception of fencing in two pavilion areas of the rodeo grounds to make an additional outside staging areas for the inmates. There were few structural changes that needed to be made. So there were rumors, completely unfounded, that Angola was flooded, and it was necessary to work with media representatives to quell those rumors. Actually, direct storm damage at Angola had been limited to some roof damage in addition to the power outage. Early in the situation, the communication with headquarters, IMC, was sporadic and generally had to be conducted over the satellite phone. Thus, the institution did not know when to expect inmates. As a result, it was not possible to release staff for the rest periods, and instead, the institution attempted to keep most staff on site. In light of the problems with the various communication systems, the institution generally regarded their ability to communicate with the headquarters, IMC, as good to excellent throughout most of the period following the evacuation. Staff pointed out that it would have been useful to attempt to pause in some of the ongoing activities, fall back and regroup, and reprioritize objectives. These comments were, in general, similar to those from Elaine Hunt's and reflected some lack of ability to find the big picture in the midst of the considerable chaos, as well as underscoring the need for status reports.
Yeah, so Angola sends two tactical teams, and they're comprised of 40 staff members to New Orleans to help with the parish prison's evacuations. Those teams then stayed to help provide security at what was known as Camp Amtrak. With their tactical team staff in New Orleans, Angola kept 20 field officers on standby at the prison as a precaution against a disturbance, a mass escape, or something similar. Field officers were the natural choice for this assignment since they worked armed post regularly. Releases were a particular problem at Angola. With different parishes involved, there were many different kinds of release papers. If someone appeared at Angola with what looked like official release papers for one of the evacuees, there was no guarantee the paperwork could be verified. For example, months after the initial evacuation, St. Bernard Parish still had no working phones or faxes that could be used to verify court or parish prison paperwork. As a result, some evacuees were released without any verification of orders. That is fundamental under normal circumstances. with shelter space at a premium, and with a large number of offenders who could not locate families locally, the department authorized out-of-state bus tickets for inmates who had available living arrangements with family in other states. Most often, those arrangements involve states neighboring Louisiana. But at Angola, for example, some women were given bus tickets to Ohio or New England states. There was little choice if the women were to be released to a location and situation that provided them safety.
So, y'all, the small group and individual interviews with male and female evacuees at Angola produced the same kinds of stories and information that had been received from inmates at Elaine Hunt's and LCIW.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's easy to create your dream kitchen with Clearview Cabinetry at Menards. With multiple finishes to choose from, you'll be sure to find a style that fits perfect for you. Clearview Cabinetry offers features like soft closed doors and drawers as standard and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Explore Clearview's cabinet options and start designing today in store or on Menards.com, where you can find more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
There were complaints about lack of court process and lack of review of individual cases, but most evacuees saw the staff and the living arrangements at Angola as reasonable to quite positive. Most of the bitterness, anger, and detailed stories of horrendous situations had to do with conditions in the various parish prisons immediately prior to evacuation. Now, Warden Kane emphasized that Angola had extensive history in preparing for hurricanes and that they were well prepared for the storm impact, if in retrospect, a bit overly optimistic. Now, Warden Kane had talked with Secretary Stadler as early as Saturday night, a day before the storm hit, discussing possible ways that Angola might provide assistance to other areas. The institution also had a history of community assistance and assistance to other parts of the criminal justice system during hurricanes. And by late Monday night, Warren Kane was en route to New Orleans to work with Secretary Stadler, and the immediate objective was to arrange enough buses to effect the evacuation of Jefferson Parish. Tuesday, he joined Secretary Stadler, Probation and Parole Director Jeannie Powers, and Attorney General Charles Foti Jr., who had formed an informal command group to begin to deal with the NOPP evacuation. Warren Kane reported early decisions to get department vehicles out of the area ahead of the rise in waters. Now, many of the state and local agencies did not get their vehicles out and lost them. And with flood water still rising at OPP, the department bought 3 flat-bottom aluminum skiffs with 60-horsepower outboard motors. The situation was deteriorating so rapidly that when the group left OPP Tuesday night, prior to buying the boats, they were unable to drive back on the same roads they had come in on. It's flooding everywhere. The Warden Kane described in some detail the situation at OPP and at the overpass that became the staging area for the evacuees to put on buses and vans. There was no police presence either at OPP evacuation site or at the overpass. It was Louisiana Department of Corrections and Safety staff and primarily probation and parole that established traffic control on their freeway above the and at the overpass. The 8-foot wide by 50-foot high scaffolding that the department brought in and erected from the overpass down to the highway, allowing movement of evacuees to the buses to proceed faster and more safely, was the creative idea of Warden LeBlanc. That's Jimmy LeBlanc. Without communication, he and other department officials were unaware of many of these severe problems until after the fact. The communication system's failures also meant that there would have been no way to coordinate those kinds of efforts by the department.
So as New Orleans flooded, the whole country watched, and media coverage was especially prevalent when they were showing the Superdome, right?
Yeah, it was bad.
And I'm going to tell y'all about Camp Amtrak. So in New Orleans, people are looting everywhere, and there is pretty much a lawlessness all over the place. There was nobody getting arrested at this point. It was a free-for-all. And in the days following Katrina's landfall, pressure mounted to reestablish the rule of law in southeastern Louisiana. However, the jails of Orleans, Jefferson, and St. Bernard parishes were completely closed, and it was obvious that none were going to reopen anytime soon. In order for the National Guard, the state police, and remnants of local law enforcement agencies to begin to operate, there had to be some sort of place to which arrestees could be transported, booked, and safely detained. The most pressing need was for a jail within New Orleans, but the entire Orleans Parish prison complex was out of the question because of flooding. So Secretary Stadler and Sheriff Gussman, they jointly choose a location of the new jail. And they actually chose a Greyhound bus station, which adjoined the Amtrak train station. The location offered good road access, and when the two stations were taken together, adequate office space and inside areas, as well as a large outside area with vehicle access that could be fenced off and used for law enforcement delivery of arrestees. An additional advantage was that many of the outside areas were already heavily fenced and reasonably secure, minimizing the amount of additional fencing that had to be constructed. Much of the necessary construction was done by Angola's tactical teams, and Camp Amtrak remained a work in progress after it opened. Amazingly, Camp Amtrak was open and fully operational as a jail by September 3rd, 2005, y'all, and that's like 5 days after the storm hit. In some ways, the physical facility was the least of the challenges facing the staff. The department had never run a jail, and none of the established protocols and procedures for the Department of Public Safety and Corrections covered handling new police detainees. Fortunately, officers from the New York City Department of Corrections arrived relatively early in the Camp Amtrak saga, and they proved invaluable because of the jail operations and their business in that. They helped Louisiana staff develop appropriate emergency personnel for receiving, screening, processing, and housing new prisoners. New arrestees were entitled to a speedy court appearance. Thus, a court had to be established on the second floor of Camp Amtrak. Officers were established on the second floor of Camp Amtrak for the ATF, offices rather, the State Attorney General's Office, the FBI, the Department of Justice, everybody, the District Attorney's Office, and more. Most of the prisoners processed through Camp Amtrak were arrested for fairly serious offenses because law enforcement, they were way too busy in the situation to make arrests on minor charges. You got a busted headlight. They don't give a shit, right? Those law enforcement officers working in the greater New Orleans area were aware that Camp Amtrak had limited capacity to make the makeshift jail with staff with little or no jail experience successfully completed the intake process and provided housing for over 1,000 offenders, including murderers, rapists, and other serious offenders. As of February 2006, well after Camp Amtrak had been closed, not a single lawsuit had been filed over any of the operations there. You believe that?
That's crazy.
With all of Warden Kane's experience at Angola, he reported seeing more media at Camp Amtrak than he had ever seen in his entire career. His approach at Camp Amtrak with the media was simple: tell them the truth and give them complete access. As a result of that approach, and because there were no severe incidents in the jail, the coverage of Camp Amtrak was high profile, but almost entirely positive. Supplies and logistics at Camp Amtrak were a challenge. Warden Kane arranged for 9 inmates from Angola to stay there and work as cooks. Amtrak had large quantities of food in a warehouse on site, and they made it available to corrections staff who fed up to 200 individuals a day. It should be noted that the Louisiana Department of Safety and Corrections staff saved the Amtrak building food and substantial amount of money because until the corrections staff arrived there, individuals had been looting in the bus station and attempting to loot the train station. Water for Camp Amtrak was a more serious problem. Eventually, the tactical team worked out a method for obtaining water. A local water company had water trucks and a water supply. The company was not operating. However, looters were going onto the company property and filling water trucks or taking filled trucks and driving off the property, presumably to sell the water in the communities. Wow. Louisiana State Police tactical teams will wait outside the property until the looters drove a water truck out and then stopped the truck, repossessed it, and drove the truck to Camp Amtrak. So they let the looters do all the work, and then when they drove out, they said, we're going to go ahead and take it from here.
We'll get that from
you. Yeah, thank you for loading up those 900 cases of water. We'll take it from here. At one point, Camp Amtrak was taking fire from a nearby high-rise garage. A tactical team was sent to the garage through the higher floors and clear out the shooters and take control. Warren Kane commented to that at that point that it just didn't seem like it was still America. Warren Kane ran Camp Amtrak for approximately 1 month. Two majors alternated shifts and ran jail operations for the warden. They lived in a trailer on site so that one or both were constantly available.
Crazy.
Yeah.
They were rolling with it, man.
Nuts over there.
And I actually have a buddy from JP, SO. He's retired now, and he was there during this time, and he said it was fucking crazy. But anyway, Camp Amtrak had approximately 16 fenced-off areas, which were each used as a containment pens for offenders. There might be up to 30 to 40 prisoners in one pen, and over 500 detainees were at Camp Amtrak at its maximum. Now, once they became reasonably well-organized, they sent buses to Elaine Hunt's and to LCIW every day with prisoners in order to keep the population down at Camp Amtrak. Many supplies and services had to be improvised. There were no showers, and there was no supply of inmate garb. Instead, they used old clothes when possible, and they had salvaged a few sets of inmate garb that originated at OPP. The primary source of food was MREs from the National Guard and water, and also from the National Guard. The food and water was not supplied through FEMA, but rather because of informal contracts and the correctional staff contacts the correctional staff had with the National Guard staff. I like me and my buddies in the National Guard, I call them up saying, I needed it, right?
Yeah.
I'm up, say I'm coming to get whatever, right? But Camp Amtrak did not have safety cells, padded rooms, or other safe areas to segregate violent or wild psychotic arrestees. They had little choice but to resort to handcuffing detainees to fix objects when necessary. And there was a large steel rail that buses pulled up to, and prisoners could be handcuffed around that rail and would be secure for some time, obviously. Every so often, one of the law enforcement agencies would call in or radio in saying that a prisoner was en route who was kicking the windows out of the police vehicle. Happens every night. And the jail staff were quite limited in their responses. There was no mental health staff on site to give medications. If the prisoner was floridly psychotic, he or she would be sent directly to Jefferson Hospital. And most times, there were EMTs and or paramedics, and that was a substantial help to the jail staff. Now, Camp Amtrak used old-style Polaroid photos and similarly old-style fingerprint cards for prisoner identification. And they say old-style, and I use both of those in my police career. But in many cases, the jail developed its own documentation and forms. And once inmates had been booked and identified, the jail staff used the 16 or so pens to try to separate prisoners by seriousness of offense. Now, use of force incidents at Camp Amtrak were infrequent. One prisoner kicked a canine and was bitten. Good for him. Another prisoner was shot by a beanbag round that neither of those prisoners' injuries were serious. Camp Amtrak tried to maintain 3 staff in booking and 3 or more staff in the lockup areas around the clock. The 2 majors in charge of the operation of Camp Amtrak were concerned that the facility was so visible and accessible from the street and that there was a substantial risk of family, friends, or gang members trying to break prisoners out of the facility.
Mm.
And as a preventive measure, the National Guard troops were used to guard the perimeter and no outside assaults or major escape attempts occurred. And you already know what Warden Kane did too. He had machine guns outside the door.
You better believe it. So the work at Camp Amtrak was high stress and exhausting, as you can imagine. Right. Once the jail was up and running, the staff pattern was 6 hours on, 6 hours off. But all staff were just tired. And you got to remember, this is completely outside, y'all, right, in the middle of August, early September.
And when you got the water around you, it makes it even hotter.
Yeah. Yeah. So 6 hours was plenty. There were inmates' mattresses in some small rooms that staff used for sleeping, but one of the managers said that the best rest he got was in the first several days, and it was 3 hours at a time on a park bench. While the public safety concerns with Camp Amtrak were serious, staff described excellent cooperation and a team effort among many staff members. There was an open expression of ideas and opinions among staff in trying to solve many problems, and the fact that most staff had worked together at Angola for many years had a long history of close relationships was a valuable bonus. By October 17th of 2005, Camp Amtrak had been in operation for 1.5 months.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
1,284 prisoners have been processed, including 132 females. 585 individuals were booked into Camp Amtrak on misdemeanors and 699 on state felony charges. About 2/3 of the prisoners with felony charges were transferred to state prisons, including 414 male arrestees with felony charges being sent to Elaine Hunt, and 62 females were sent to LCIW. All misdemeanors were discharged directly from Camp Amtrak. There were 19 different arresting agencies that brought one or more prisoners to Camp Amtrak. The majority of these agencies accounted for less than 10 arrests each. The New Orleans PD accounted for 756 arrestees, and JPSO, Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office, brought in 313 individuals. 3 other law enforcement agencies, the Louisiana State Police, Kenner Police, and St. Bernard Parish Sheriff's Office, accounted for 76, 55, and 32 arrests, respectively.
Well, that's crazy. The most ironic arrest of the almost 1,300, and the funniest, if any arrest could be deemed humorous, was the first person processed at Camp Amtrak. That individual drove into the jail the day it was open, trying to buy a train ticket, and he was driving a stolen car.
No! That's pretty funny, I gotta say.
Dumbass motherfuckers.
He just wanted a train ticket.
I
gotta roll. Wow.
Yeah, the train rolling right in the Camp Amtrak.
That's a true story.
Yes, indeed. And
very good.
Yep. Another good story. And I can see a lot of it vividly in my mind as we're reading over it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Because how many thousands of times have I driven through New Orleans and right there by OPP and on that overpass and everything else?
It was a time like no other time in history.
Yeah.
And when we come back next time, we're going to tell you about Katrina hitting Washington Correctional Institute, mm-hmm. WCI, it's yeah. known as. And that's a very a very limited story that not a lot of people know. And that took a direct hit almost from Katrina.
That's in the far east.
Yep.
And right on the beach, close to the Mississippi line.
Yeah. So we'll tell you about that next week. Woody, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I love you. Thank you, Patreon members. We love and appreciate each and every one. We love all y'all that are listening to the show, and can please continue to like and share and all that good podcaster shit.
That's it. And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Evans.
We are your host of Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
Complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.